Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Monkey tennis?
Bring, bring.
There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey tennis?
Little pierce my foot on the spine.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
No.
Monkey tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Okay.
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzock of a guy.
Yes, and yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Monkey tennis?
Back of the net.
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hello, friends, and welcome back to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, where we are trawling our way through Series 3 of Alan's podcast from the Oast House. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
She had put two and two together and come up with 74. Her age.
Nick Alder.
Carlsberg wine and eggs for an unbeatable 999.
And Tom Stab.
Every morning, before my shower, I go into the garage, grab a couple of balls, and play with myself until I'm well and truly spent.
There we go.
That's so not yes, even an Alan quote, that's just Stab.
Yeah, but what was the quote?
Happened. I wish I could afford a garage.
So yes, we're working our way through From the Oast House. For those of you who joined us thinking this is From the Oast House, you are bang wrong. We are a fan podcast, so you're going to need to go back to Audible and listen to From the Oast House first. Audible didn't pay us to say that, but if you did hear us talking earlier in the episode, an ad for Audible, then we were paid to say that. So we're going to be tackling two episodes of From the Oast House today, Hospital Radio and Tinned Meat. But before that, a little bit of info about Audible's promo for this series of Oast House. Over to Mr. Tom Dark.
Yeah, we thought it'd be worth diving into a few of the Audible adverts or potentially kind of press releases that happened around the launch of this series, because they're always a good way to add a bit more context to the APU, and it essentially is bonus Alan content as well. So you know, in a kind of similar vein to his BBC emails when he launched this time and stuff like that. So the press release for Oast House Series 3 reads thus. Meet Alan Partridge. Alan Partridge is a familiar face, brackets and voice, to anyone who enjoys genuinely good television, brackets and radio, having been seen, brackets and heard, on shows that have delighted the eyes, brackets and ears, of viewers, brackets and listeners, for decades, including BBC Tea Time Show This Time, brackets, and North Norfolk Digital Coffee Time Show, Mid Morning Matters. Broadcaster, writer, motivational speaker, sports fan, thought leader, businessman, and consummate professional, Alan enjoys bitter shandy, shandied lager, high-end knitwear and personal success. He is currently doing very well indeed. Few humans in the history of civilization have had a third series of their podcast commissioned. Fewer still have produced one that's actually any good. Partridge Gordon Yes. Allen, or Alan Gordon Partridge to write his name the correct way round, is one of them. It's fun, I like this. Now has come to put at the controls of a podcast as he is driving all cars and doing most swimming strokes. Alan returns with a series that whooshes and pinballs around the many areas. There are approximately nine, close brackets, of his life and brain. And with no regular contracted broadcasting work to clutter up his days, Alan is free to focus on matters closer to home. Still based at his quasi-rural Oast house, which now boasts a significantly better kettle than his series 1 and 2, he shares with us thoughts, ideas, hopes and dreams spread across 11 episodes with a mean duration of the 20 minutes stipulated in the contract. Would a better approach have been to let the content of each episode dictate its length? Of course it would, but that's a discussion for another day. So join Alan as he tackles the green-eyed monster of envy in his attempts to keep hold of his new love, as he navigates how to reinvigorate an increasingly distracted personal assistant, as he vies for one of the most sought-after car-related ambassadorial positions of all of East Anglia, and as he seeks to track down an old Geordie friend, long presumed dead. They say there's nothing more boring than the mundanities of everyday life. Well, Alan's podcast focuses on literally nothing else. We hope you enjoy it. So there we go. That's quite a lot
Very
of fun,
good.
That.
That's great, yeah. Lots of fun.
It's quite interesting. There's actually a little nugget from that is rehashed. I'm just holding it up to the Zoom chat for the rest of the group. On the inside jacket of Nomad, where he talks about being, that he enjoys bitter shandy, shandied lager, high-end knitwear and personal success. So a little bit of classic Gibbons rehashing there.
They've reused it, you fool.
There we go. So on to episode 3 from the Oast House Hospital Radio, 24 minutes, 43 seconds in length. Tom Dark, what is the what are Audible saying about this episode?
The official Audible synopsis is: Alan returns to his roots, but this time as Svengali, not disc jockey.
Which is all but proven wrong by the end of this episode. But we'll get to
yeah.
that.
Yeah, good point.
So opens with Alan seemingly auditioning a number of people to read his terrible slogan for Hospital Radio: "Keeping you alive from 2 till 5."
Does that mean that they die at 5:01?
Just what the doctor ordered. Well, presumably his shift's over and therefore their fate is no longer his concern. I guess kind of a bastardization of Dolly Parton as well. So he's going through saying yes or no, swiping left or right on these presenters. You'll notice that all of the ones he says yes to sound like, they're not. They have no regional or foreign accents, basically. None of them make it through the mix. And
I think the female readers do fare better than the male ones as well.
Absolutely yeah. that, yep. So he is now working as a consultant to recruit a roster of Hospital Radio broadcasters. He says he's at the beating heart of the media's landscape. No, not the BBC. If the BBC had a heart, it went into cardiac arrest when they cancelled Tomorrow's World and Goodnight Sweetheart, and went completely when they commissioned a second series of Vigil, kept alive only by the intravenous drip of licence payer money and the ventilator of Doctor Who, and only the Conservatives have the balls to pull the plug. So yeah, a lot of fun, and obviously an Alan Yes Coogan no. Well, kind of, in that they both appreciated working for the BBC when they did, but are now free to stick the boot in.
I would have thought that Alan would be a fan of Vigil. I thought he'd be a fan of Saran Jones, personally.
I thought it was surprising that Vigil took a bit of a kicking. I wonder if this is a bit of a reversal and this is a Coogan and Gibbons yes, because what I started to look at was there ever a scheduling or a budget issue rivalry between Vigil and this time? So if you go back to the schedules, Vigil Series 1 came out in June 2021. And the second final series of this time with Alan Partridge came out in August 2021. So I did wonder if perhaps the BBC diverted some of their comedy funding over to drama, and that this time lost out. This time's loss was Vigil's gain, or perhaps
the conspiracy wide open here.
Or given that they transmitted 2 months apart, perhaps this time was after the time slot that Vigil had. I don't know. I just wonder if there's an ulterior motive for giving Vigil a kicking here.
I wonder, I hadn't thought of this, but as you say it, I wonder if it's almost like they know the writers of Vigil and it's an in-joke for them. Because
that could be nice.
That's good.
Vigil does stand out as odd. Everything else is kind of like, you know, Goodnight Sweetheart. It's ludicrous because it's so old and, you know, frankly, bar Richard Herring, is pretty much forgotten about.
Goodnight Sweetheart.
Yeah, but Vigil really kind of stands out. So there has to be a reason, and we'll probably never know what it is, but there's got to be something.
Slightly more subtle kicking comes for GB News, which he describes as combining the fury of a divorced woman with the sardonic humour of a divorced man.
Yeah.
And please remember, after a shaky start, it's actually turning into a bloody good channel.
Yeah, give it a chance.
I mean, we do know that Alan is obviously conservative, but I think this is maybe the first mention of GB News. Or like Alan supporting GB News.
So I think it's the first supportive mention.
Yeah.
Or fully supportive mention.
Yeah, again, I think it's probably it's almost they haven't gone in too hard on it because it's the obvious thing to sort of to reference and talk about, so they've kind of stayed away from it. But it would be mad not to have any kind of nod and a wink to it. But they're never going to talk openly about it in a kind of a plotline sense of things. You might get the odd presenter referenced or taken down a peg or two.
I'm sure we'll come back to this again, but I feel like this series is richer in terms of its roots back to earlier Alan projects. I think there are closer ties, more callbacks, more references. I mean, obviously, the big narrative thing that's coming up is a callback to plenty of previous Partridge, but this whole kind of reference back to Hospital Radio and various things, I feel like they're kind of giving fans what they want a bit more in this series in terms of drawing parallels between old and new Partridge. And so, yeah, he's back on Hospital Radio, giving hope to the hopeless, joy to the joyless, and I enjoyed this, care to the careless.
Really good.
It's their own fault they're there.
Yeah.
It did also, this whole thing made me think, is Hospital Radio even a thing anymore? I presume this is something that was, you know, a cute curio of the 90s and was now well past happening. You know, like there used to be record, you know, used to have in-store radio and DJs and record stores. Top Man in Oxford Circus used to have a DJ in the window and all of that stuff. So I had a look and it turns out Hospital Radio is still very much a thing, and Norwich does still have one. Hospital Radio Norwich is a voluntary organization and registered charity whose aim is to relieve the stress and distress of hospitalization by befriending patients at their bedsides and entertaining them through broadcasting, which sounds like it could have been written by Alan, but that is a real sentence.
There is a link to the APU, obviously, as well as Alan having his background in hospital radio. But in real life, Tim Key worked in hospital radio. He worked at Kidderminster Hospital. Some other famous hospital radio alumni, Ken Bruce, Jill Dando, Simon Mayo, Chris Moyles, Christian O'Connell, Carl Pilkington, Philip Schofield, Hugh Stevens and Jeremy Vine all started their careers on hospital radio.
Oh, there you go. I guess the two routes into radio are hospital or student, basically. Mm. That's how most people get their breaks, isn't it? There's a nice Dettol reference here. Again, another throwback to Alan's Deep Bath, sponsored by Dettol, where he talks about using a cap full in the bath, a mug full in the loo.
What he's saying here is the reassuring smell of cleanliness.
Yeah. I would 100% back this as well. I personally use 3 toilet cleaning ingredients to really deal with those nasty troubles that you sometimes get of in the morning after.
What are the big three?
What are they? What are they? The big three? You're talking duck discs. That sees you through the week. The blue loo block. That is a one-time use. That is a kind of a real kind of like powerhouse of toilet cleanser.
I'm a fan of the blue block.
Blue block, absolutely. And then always bleach post-muck just to make sure that everything just disintegrates.
But this is all going into your bath, right? Your weekly bath, get the bleach in there, job done.
Yeah.
Lovely and clean.
And then just a quick scrub of the toilet, that's all.
So you're bleaching every time you do a number two?
Just when there's problems. When there's problems.
What kind of problems
to me
are you talking
like
about?
You need an instructional DVD presented by Eamon Holmes and his family.
or a bidet. That would actually genuinely help. Oh, God.
I was on Alan's side when he starts ranting at Avanti West Coast.
For their
frequent, noisy announcement onboard announcements, often saying the same thing multiple times between stations. Has anyone ever been stuck on a train where it's automated announcements and they've somehow got stuck and you've got like the same thing every 30 seconds or it sounds like someone's stuttering? I've had that loads. It's so annoying.
No, but my favourite is always when you're on the train and the stations are the wrong way round. So instead of going like from station A to Victoria, it thinks you're going from Victoria to station A. So it's basically doing it in reverse. And then you'll also get the conductor going, "Oh, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, you've probably noticed that the stations are not appearing in the right order." So it's doubling down, basically. There's no need. We don't need these things. We don't need to be told.
And this is one of Alan's problems, isn't it? Not just that the announcements are unnecessary, but also that the people on the train seem to be powerless to stop or change them.
Yeah, and you can control the volume of your voice. And this feels very much like the Venn diagram of Coogan and Alan is overlapping massively, and also probably overlapping with anyone that takes the train, quite frankly, because these are common frustrations. I think we've talked about this before, that Coogan is a train traveller. I remember he went on to the Richard Herring Leicester Square Theatre podcast. He talked about how he was getting the train back to Brighton. So you might think of him as being this like chauffeured celebrity, but actually he is a man of the trains. And therefore, I think this frustration is one that he kind of holds himself as much as the character probably does.
So hang on. Yeah. So he's not a chauffeur driver. He's a man of the trains, but also crucially, he has told you that. So
I'm saying he's someone
who wants to make the point that he's a man of the trains. That's what I'm saying.
Adam, he needed a driving license. He convinced a judge. convinced.
Was that just, I wonder at the time when he recorded that podcast, was he kind of like fighting the driving ban or something? Maybe that's why he was a man of the trains.
Yeah, maybe.
Be interested to crunch the data on that.
I suspect it's a Coogan yes, Alan yes on the use of sarcasm as well, that they both know that you shouldn't do it, but it's a bit of fun for the user and a bit unpleasant for the UZ and nice to deploy once in a while. It's time for this episode's Gotta Try Stand-Up. As he says, hospital radio doesn't have the production values of BBC radio or commercial radio or student radio or in-store radio, but it's got bags of heart and plenty of guts, just like the incinerator. Gotta Try Stand-Up.
Enjoyed as well the following sentence where he basically says how dear hospital radio is to him, but not so dear that he can't hide the flatulence noise out of his mouth, and that he can't re-record that line, bearing in mind it's a podcast, which you literally have the ability to re-record lines as much as you need to get them right.
So his hospital station was St Jude's. He then becomes very mealy-mouthed explaining what happened to St Jude's. They had a public inquiry. A few patients kicked the bucket a bit early due to sloppy, you know, just wrong drugs administered.
Yeah. Leave that there.
Right, so we need to do a bit of a fact check here. And Tom, I know you've got the Nomad book with you. I can't remember which book we need to check. So, yeah, here he's saying he was a hospital radio DJ at St Jude's. Now, I think the name of this is wrong, because the other week we were talking about some of the recent Partridge articles, including The Big Issue, and there was kind of like this career overview at the beginning of that. He said, after a long unpaid stint on hospital radio station Radio Smile at St Luke's Hospital, Norwich, brackets 1973 to 1983. So I think they've got the name of the hospital totally wrong here. Now, I can't which book is the hospital radio chapter in. Is it I Partridge?
It's I Partridge, because I remember he says, "Good morning, St. Luke's."
That's it. Yeah, there
and
you go.
We kind of talked about it being a kind of, you know, what's the Robin Williams film, like Good Morning Vietnam?
Yes. Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah,
it's that kind of like riffing on that. But you are quite right, and it is in I Partridge.
And they're whereas they are bang wrong. Yeah.
Well, I'm not sure they are, because they do reference in this bit that St Jude's had to change its name because of this public inquiry. So it's possible the public inquiry happened before he joined, and by the time he got there, St Jude's had become St Luke's.
But the years listed when it are the same.
Yeah, well, the hospital's the same. That's what I'm saying. But it used to be St Jude's, and then it was changed to St Luke's, and then he got there in 1975. I mean, I feel like I'm doing a lot of legwork here trying to dig the Gibbonses out of a hole, but it's possible.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's an inconsistency in the APU, that's for sure.
It would definitely be good to I'm sure they'll come on the podcast one day, but some of these inconsistencies would be great to kind of put to them. Are they intentional? Because they're so trivial that it kind of doesn't make any sense. Or are they just trying to trip us up? Or are they trying to keep the archivist busy? Or is the archivist failing them miserably and we could do a better job if we were put on some kind of, you know, monthly retainer whereby we sense-checked all of their work? I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. Alan was at St. Jude's, St. Luke's, 75 to 83. 215 patients died during his tenure, and then there's a lovely bit about Grant Shapps conjuring up the image of Grant Shapps smashing the bulbs in an old sunbed that he bought off eBay to get free. He had to go to hospital, but as a man of many, this is my favorite bit, as a man of many aliases, he couldn't remember which name his private healthcare was under.
Yeah.
So forced to go to an NHS hospital, and he was appalled to learn there was no hospital radio. He had to read a book and speak to an old person, a man who seemed to think he could help him and slash was counting the days.
I think it's worth pulling up a couple of lines here. I really liked the imagery that Grant Shapps got trapped in a sunbed like a Venus flytrap. And also the line where he says to Alan, "Alan, I had an absolutely shit time. Where was the hospital radio?" That really made me laugh.
I had a little look on eBay, how much it would cost to buy a second-hand sunbed. Anyone want to hazard a guess how much a second-hand sunbed costs?
Oh, I reckon $200-$300.
You're in the right ballpark. The top result on eBay is £370. That's £370. Nice.
And a bonus point to any listeners who the image of Grant Shapps flailing around in a failing sunbed, if it conjured up any images of a film in the Final Destination series where exactly the same thing happens to one of the poor victims. Amazing.
Speaking of Shapps, I really like the bit when Alan goes on to describe that he got annoyed that there was a man in the hospital that thought Grant Shapps would be able to help him. I love the way that Steve and the Gibbons brothers kind of use Alan's naivety around his friendship with Grant Shapps to actually like stick the knife into him, like kind of in the real life context, if you see what I mean. I always think that's quite fun writing for me.
It's great, isn't it? It becomes apparent that actually this Svengali role that Alan's put himself in is expanded from the original request from the hospital, which was they just wanted him to look over a few CVs. So he said, I'll be your Svengali, forget the fee. They said there was no fee. He said, yeah, forget the fee. He just wants a desk, a rotating chair, and the power to hire and fire, and a login so he can listen. And there's another Shapps callback here, a reference back to All the Money Comes, which is one of our faves.
Have you got the list of his advice?
No, go on.
It's be nice, put a bit back, look people in the eye, firm handshake, smile, keep your hand out of the cookie jar. In the short term, all the money comes. Brilliant.
And a lovely Shapps-esque bit where Alan uses his logic to effectively get a load of dialysis machines put outside under a tarpaulin so he can have a bigger room for his studio.
I like the fact that he asked the question, do dialysis machines need a view?
Yeah. I think he's taking the piss. But he is, as he says, he is qualified for this role. He knows both the ropes and his onions. Goes on to name all of the bad songs that you should avoid on hospital radio, Knocking on Heaven's Door, The Final Countdown, I Just Died in Your Arms Tonight. I wondered if anyone in the group had any other suggestions. I would probably put Bodies by Drowning Pool on the Do Not playlist.
Girlfriend in a Coma?
Yeah.
Good one.
I did think it was quite nice to have the mention of a dialysis machine here. It's a bit of a throwback to Know Me, Knowing You, with the kidney dialysis machine being quite a key plot point in that episode. Just a nice drawing between the two eras of Alan there.
I don't have any context to this next line, so someone can maybe fill in the blanks around it. But my notes simply say, enjoyed the name Barney Turpin, obviously in reference to Elton John's writing partner.
Yep. Oh yeah, I've got some context here. So he says that he's been recalibrated, not as a presenter, now as a sort of shadowy figure behind the scenes, like Elton's lad, Barney Turpin. Presumably a bastardization of Bernie Taupin and Dick Turpin.
Yeah. I like Elton's nice. Lad as well. That's quite fun.
Elton's Elton's boy. So he's starting to go through potential presenters, and he's settled on Hayley Swales, who doesn't tick diversity boxes but does have access to her dad's car, which is a plus when your call time is 5:30 a.m.
And
bit
thank
of a goody
goodness,
two-shoes.
Yeah, privately educated, thank goodness.
Yes, a bit of a goody two-shoes, but you can't all be Chris Evans. You have to walk a tightrope between shaking the tree and just being a not a nice person. And for the most part, Chris Evans gets it right. I really enjoy, actually, this concept. I think this would make a great TV show. Alan is a station manager to a group of rich kids. I think that there's a great concept there. Maybe a sequel to Mid-Morning Matters. He goes on to say, Greg James, Joe Wiley, a couple of teachers' pets, but they get the best gigs, which is kind of true.
It's kind of fun as well, knowing that Greg James is a massive Partridge fan. So I'd be really interested to know what he made of what I believe is his first name check in the APU. But I'd imagine he's probably quite flattered, loves it, to be honest. I was going to say, just to jump back to something just quickly, there is a line where Alan says, in the days of broadcasting, quick tip, jump before you're pushed. And I thought that was quite interesting because arguably Alan's been pushed at least, what, three times? Twice from the BBC, at least once from North Norfolk Digital as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he's not taking his own advice there.
Michael's the only one that's done any jumping, surely.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. So a bit of a chat about diversity here and how it's a slow process. But there are those guys we all want to help. He says, wheelchairs don't grow on trees. What about bamboo? Bamboo isn't trees. Is he having an argument with himself at this point?
Just Google bamboo, Adam. That's the message I got from this.
If you want to know more about bamboo, Google bamboo. Yeah.
It's always quite fun when Alan runs through the schedule of the radio station that he's involved with, isn't it? So this time we've got Damien and Dwayne, who don't do drive time.
PDBB.
That'd be insensitive. Yep, it's PDBB, pre-dinner and bed bath, followed by Dawn O'Dell, and then the late night host.
Dawn O'Dell, who's been asked to leave, don't forget.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, yeah, she was caught up in the controversy from earlier with the bodies.
The last presenter is Freddie Keelty.
That's it. The old ladies love him. He's gay.
Oh, and then you get a bit of more AP stand-up. We get on like the very house fires that have filled up the Burns ward.
Got to try stand-up. Did anybody else enjoy this bit where he gets absolutely tied in knots imagining that he's Charlie and that all of these young presenters are his angels? He can make his angels do things with each other while he plays with them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the bit that I enjoyed the most is the boss of Charlie's Angels, can't remember his name, and then slight pause, and it'll be Charlie, won't it? I mean, I don't know. I don't know whether, like, is that actually good writing or not. I found it really funny, but it's like, it's just, it kind of isn't even really a joke in a way, but I think it's just on brand for the character.
It's on paper, it doesn't work. But when performed by a character which has heritage and backstory, it suddenly becomes very funny.
A great bit where he's trying to source a Kessel to give away, I think, from Robert Dias. They don't want to give him one, so he threatens to shop them to the North Norfolk Gazette. And then bang, he's got a Kessel.
Hey, presto, you've got a Kessel.
Yep. Also, just to drive that conspiracy a little deeper, the press release that we read out at the top of the episode did mention that he has significantly better Kettle for this series of Oast House.
Yes.
So I wonder if he's done a 2-for-1 here with Bobby Dias. One for the hospital, one for Alan.
Has anyone got note of Katrina's no-nonsense approach to what she thinks voluntary workers are?
This is amazing. This line is a real highlight. Yes, Katrina thinks that voluntary work is thick do-gooders being used as a doormat by scroungers. That very much is Katrina in a nutshell.
So we come to the crux of this episode. Obviously, he's cast himself as a Svengali character, but 8 a.m. on Thursday, it turns out all his presenters have gone down with something. So after spending a lot of time explaining that he's not doing it and why he's not doing it, he then has a very quick turnaround when he hears his own voiceover in B&Q and realises he has a skill and a gift. He says that he got on the phone to them and he just said two words, "I'll do it," which is four words, three at best. Also wondered if that was some sort of reference to the "you can do it when you B&Q it" tagline, since he's just heard his own voiceover in B&Q "I'll do it."
Oh, we also I just really liked the description of what he's doing at B&Q, that he's browsing horse-shaped bum supports, aka toilet seats.
Has anybody got anything about his attitude towards hospital car park charges? I quite enjoyed that. That he is all for hospitals charging parking because it weeds out the time wasters, And then there's a bit about people coming in with stubbed toes, thick ears, and fat lips.
Oh yeah, and he has kind of an imagined conversation here, doesn't he? And I love the bit. Oh, I've got a thick ear, yeah, because you came in first time. Do you want a fat lip to go with it? Get out. The delivery of that really made me laugh.
And then straight off the back of him saying that he thinks hospitals are right to charge for parking, you then hear him, as the sound fades out, trying to claim that he's a doctor to park in staff parking for free.
And I think but have we hit... if you listen really closely on it fade as well, so you hear him say, yeah, I'm a doctor, and it's really quiet. It says, I'm a paediatrophile.
Easy for me to say. Paediatrophile. Basically, a paediatrician and a paedophile. Into the worst of both worlds.
It becomes apparent that the reason no one's turned up is that there's a strike. He tried to drive through the picket line, and then he gets a bit confused and says his dogs are apolitical. He doesn't have a dog in the fight, but he then goes on to. Speculate as to the political leanings of various breeds of dog. I presume Nick at least will have a note on this.
I think all dogs would vote for the Green Party. That's my hot take on how dogs would vote in a general election.
Not sure about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's right there. Bull Mastiff would be right wing. Cockapoo being Lib Dem. Not sure though.
Yeah, and I can't see corgis voting Labour.
As a result of him trying to drive through the picket line, he bumped a junior doctor, and people do not like that.
I like the idea that he's now hiding in a VIP parking space, or that hospitals have VIP parking spaces. But he's in the footwell and seems to be now suffering from some kind of new medical condition.
Hypoglycemia episode.
Or does he just basically want a cream egg? I think this might be more subtle
than intentional, but the fact that he's curled up in a footwell of a car with a cream egg very much conjured up an image of driving to Dundee in bare feet eating Toblerone, in that it involves
a
sweet treat and a footwell being the focus of the camera.
He says as well here that the cream egg has 2 pints of sugar. I think that's a slight exaggeration, but I did look this up. A cream egg, and can I just say, I bloody love cream eggs. A cream egg is 29% sugar. That is 26 grams of sugar in each one, which is around 6 heaped teaspoons of sugar. I still love them, I wish I didn't know that.
Cream eggs. I don't really like them. They're horrible.
Get out.
sugar spunk in a chocolate egg? No thanks.
Oh, yes, please. The other line that I thought was really good here was when he's having the kind of car park altercation before he's hidden in the footwell, is that he says one of the hospital staff says, "You're doing this for your brand," and he says, "True, I will listen to people when they make good points." I thought that was quite a nice moment of kind of clarity and awareness for him.
So he's calling Lynn, saying an urgent exit is required. Line of duty there. The next morning, he is offering to get the nurses lunch from McDonald's, I believe. 30 nurses, Lynn estimates a £200 bill. I did the maths on this. If you've got a £3.99 meal deal, you could actually feed 50 nurses, such as the value of McDonald's.
Also, I think it's quite important here that Lynn actually says, "You're looking down the fat end of 200 fat ones." So Alan says, "What are you reading at the moment?" I thought that was a great literary device where they can... introducing that idea, they can basically allow Lynn to say anything now, and it can all be applied to her current reading material, being the influence. That's just quite a fun idea. Lynn goes a bit gangster because she's reading a crime book.
I've got that note as well, and I really love those little insights into Lynn's life.
Yeah. I love the idea that he says, kind of, we all want the world to change, but people will always want beef burgers, which I thought was true. And he has a megaphone that he's taking down to the hospital so that he can make sure that people are aware of his McDonald's spread. But he says that he sometimes uses it for political campaigning, but he won't confirm the party. Keen for us to speculate. I feel like he's the sort of person that has left the Conservatives and is all over Reclaim.
I'm saying that he is, it's Tories, but he's doing that campaigning at either Schnapsy or Katrina's behest.
Yeah, yeah, good point. The Schnapsy relationship means that he probably is still tied to the Conservatives.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Has anyone got a note on Alan's denominations and how he's worked out, based on where you sit in the hierarchy of a hospital, how hungry presumably you are?
Yeah, I think this is, it's one burger per nurse. The Big Macs are for the junior doctors. A handful of fries if you're a porter, but the chicken sandwiches are saved for the managers.
I think it's great that he's just equated with where you sit on an org chart to your relative hunger. But the fact that porters, presumably as hardworking as anyone in a hospital, are only entitled to grab a handful of fries and then make some kind of hasty exit, I thought was brilliant.
Did anyone catch the lovely little throwaway line where Alan describes Lynn as the ironing lady?
Yes, brilliant.
Just like, just little lines like that, I absolutely love.
Because he's using her as a Trojan horse because they thought she was a retired angel from heaven.
Do you notice as well that Lynn's car, in this episode at least, is now a Citroen Saxo? In Oast House Series 1, she was driving a beige Maestro. All changed for Lynn.
Oh. Upgrade for Lynn. I like that he says that he supports the nurses. If the government can support a pay rise without raising inheritance tax or removing non-don statuses, it's something we can look at in a year or two. I thought that timing is wonderful, because of course in a year or two, very much the chances the current government wouldn't have to deal with it anymore.
Oh, nice.
It's a good there's a good kind of Keir Starmer dig here as well, isn't there? If you're not sure what your opinion is on something, just get someone else to test the water, find out what everyone else thinks, then do that. And I thought, to be fair, it's actually quite good that they are lampooning not just the government, but also the opposition with stuff like this. I thought that's quite well done. And, you know, when you have Alan reporting on conversations, it's kind of down to the listener to judge and assess whether they're negative or not, like in the APU. So in the APU, Alan doesn't think that Starmer's lack of opinion is necessarily a bad thing. But in the real world, I think we know that is kind of like one of the major criticisms against Starmer. So again, there's this nice interplay of what does maybe Coogan think and what does Alan think? I mean, you know, it's obviously, it's laid on quite thick. It's quite heavy-handed. It's not subtle what they're doing with like the Keir Starmer joke. But I think that's what I like about it. You know, it's very knowing, isn't it, when they do stuff like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then we build to a climax with his argument with Katrina. She says of his sort of helping out hospital radio, "You're a fucking mug."
Have you noticed she's either always drinking or smoking, pretty much, because he says she downs her glass of wine here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And
she's very much kind of like Jill 2.0, isn't she? Kind of like with the kind of like she's Jill on white wine. It's woman's hour, and what's the ITV daytime show? Loose Women. Yeah.
I think this is kind of like the first maybe little insight of just how much Katrina borderline despises Alan. Because obviously we don't hear her voice, but it's quite detailed, the exchange. And the way she talks to him is not good.
But I think the interesting thing is as well, so yes, there's that kind of, there's a controlling dynamic to the relationship. I mean, borderline, is Alan the victim of coercive control in this relationship? But
yeah,
it does seem
borderline
like,
abuse, isn't it? Here?
Yeah, but it does seem like whenever they fall out or have a kind of exchange of words like this, it basically leads to sexy time. Because Alan says, we went at it like a barn door in a gale. So is basically, is that what Alan's getting off on, that she despises him?
Well, yeah, and then the barn door bangs so hard that the photo of Katrina with her tongue in Jensen Button's ear fell down. And then Alan seems to claim this as a victory, saying, on that time, a man won and a woman lost. Toodaloo. And I thought it's funny for a few reasons. One is that he's clearly so pleased that he's allowed to say that, and that he feels like justified in reveling in it, and also seems to think that it's a very rare thing to happen that a man wins, when in fact, you know, that's often the default day after day in all aspects of life. So I think it's so rare for it to happen between him and Katrina that he sees himself as like the, you know, him and man as the underdog, and he's finally scored a rare victory, which takes us to, I think, almost to the end of the episode.
I think Alan just takes the abuse because he's made quite a few references to feeling down in the dumps and lonely, a little bit lonely, as he said in previous episodes. So I think he just wants the company. I think he's just happy to have Katrina in his life so that he's not a little bit lonely anymore.
A very fair point. And I think that brings us to the end of episode 3 of Oast House and on to episode 4. Has there ever been an episode so underwhelmingly titled as Tinned Meat? 22 minutes, 59 seconds. Tom was audible saying about tinned meat.
They are saying, while Alan dedicates time to eliminating sloth, Lynn turns sleuth in a bid to track down a figure from his past.
So it starts with a piano intro, a true crime style introduction. I thought it was quite similar to the production on the Wild
yes.
Swimming episode
yes.
in the last series.
Yep.
Yeah, and not to get ahead, but this kind of trope is one has been used before and is used again later in the series, but we'll come to it.
So it opens with quite a laboured explanation of how the format of this episode is going to run, doesn't it? Which is quite fun.
Yeah, it's lines like, it is kind of like dramatic music in the background and references to the thing that happened, as if you're supposed to, like, he's over explaining it so that the tension is removed because it's been so set up and so over explained that actually it would be better to have more of a natural build, but it's so heavily signposted that you're like, oh, well, something's obviously going to happen then.
So he opens with, trying to incentivize Lynn to hear her key performance indicators by the end of the month. And in this case, she's going to be getting a gift card for an afternoon tea with no champagne, which I would argue is not the full afternoon tea treatment. I think champagne should be included by default.
But she'll be fine with tea and tap water.
Exactly.
I think Lynn actually probably would, to be fair, but that's probably
that's true.
Not worth debating, but yeah.
It's a new leaner way of working. He's trying to get Lynn away from lethargy or faffing. There's a very brief reference to his four chickens, John, Paul, George and Richard, which I thought was great.
Although they are all female, remember?
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously you'd think that is an error on Alan's part, but actually there is a level of truth in it. I didn't know this. I don't know if anyone else in the group did, but Ringo's real name is indeed Richard.
I had to look it up to be sure, but it was my suspicion. Do you think he just refuses to refer to him as Ringo? He just thinks it's too silly a name, so
that feels quite
Richard
Alan, doesn't
for that
it?
Reason.
That he would think Ringo is a ridiculous name, so he won't recognise it.
Mm. We then get Alan's podcast idea, I think, or spin-off podcast idea, The Effective Ape, a planned interview series of people from business, media and swimming.
I mean, this feels like we've been in this territory countless times before with many of Alan's kind of like inspirational sessions, you know, forward solutions, stratagem. So when I hear Effective Ape, I'm very much like, I'm always here for it. It's always good to hear from you know, and let's face it, he's got some big names from the world of business and swimming, but he has definitely been in this sort of camp before.
I mean, this is Alan's. He's seen / heard Diary of a CEO, hasn't he? And this is his version. He's ripping off the format of just interviewing basically people from business and media to probably forward his career and to get insider information on how to invest his money, much in the same way that Stephen Bartlett allegedly does.
I thought maybe with the naming as well, it might be mocking quite a popular self-help book called The Chimp Paradox. So I did wonder maybe if it's a reference to that. But I mean, yeah, in terms of the format, it's definitely all in this kind of self-help podcast literary world, isn't it?
A couple of things I loved here. Presumably, these are all real people, with the exception of Ray Sylvester from Kaleidoscope Sausages. which I imagine...
I laughed at that so much.
Yeah, I imagine it's just, you know, one of Alan's long... the latest in the long string of meat vendors that Alan's befriended. Also, I just thought Kaleidoscope is such a good name for a sausage brand. In terms of the jumble of bits that you're going to get in it. I presume that he's expanded this from business and media to swimming, either because he fancies Sharon Davies.
yes.
Or just because these are all areas where he's got a deep awe for people who are good at it because he's so bad at it. And that's why swimming, in his mind, comes alongside business and media.
It's rubbish at all three.
So what's the list? You've got Tim Martin, so that's Weatherspoons. You've got Jake Humphries, who actually does the High Performance Podcast.
Schnapsy.
Sharon Davies, Kenneth Branagh, Schnapsy. And you've got the list of local businessmen, which I assume are kind of all made up. So Chris Dixon, Bill Shepherd, Paul Stubbs, and the aforementioned Ray Sylvester. I think that's the list, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. And if Audible don't want it, Spotify will have it, because they have deep pockets and people have heard of them. Another great dig at Audible in an Audible exclusive.
Yeah. Again, I think they let it pass because it's lining the pockets, isn't it? Audible is suddenly drenched in cash.
Yeah.
It's probably the joke here.
I mean, the writing team here, they are laughing all the way literally to the bank. They've taken a paycheck and giving Audible a kicking on the way out.
Enjoy his description of grappling with Lynn and her abilities if she were ever to get hold of you. He says she's not quick, but if she catches you, it's game over. She suppressed an angry dog before with a forearm to the neck.
I would love to see that.
Is it advert time, and is it file under very fully? For that advert,
you've got Alan. Have you got Alan 3.0 first?
I was just going to talk about Alan 3.0 because I think there's a nice subtle gag here. He says he wouldn't say Alan. He wouldn't describe himself as Alan 2.0, and you're sort of led to believe that that's because, you know, it's an outdated phrase, or he's, you know, whatever. But it's just because he's used that term in another self help book that didn't work. So he's Alan 3.0.
Did he say that Lynn called him Alan the Third, but then said, "But that sounds like not a very good king," and she chuckled. And that's when we circle back to the whole attitude thing.
Yes. And just before we go into the advert, a nice reference to the Beatles chickens. It says, "John Paul, George Richard, get back in the coop where you once belong." Lovely reference to the Get Back lyrics.
But I again think that that's like good writing from the Gibbons, but kind of bad writing on the part of Coogan. It's corkscrew, isn't it? Like, it's not that funny, but... Writing-wise, it is. And now, very much time to hear an advert for, I assume, a Hungry House-style pub delivered very much in the style of a sofa company in the January sale, which is just done so brilliantly. I mean, the list of things that are on offer in the sale are... well, some great, some slightly more confusing.
Should we maybe decide whether they're good value or not?
Oh, good, yes.
Well, I can reel off the list. So you've got steak egg and chips, $5.99. Gammon egg and chips, $4.99. Gammon and egg, $3.99. Egg and chips, $2.99. Eggs, $9.99. Carling, $4.99. Carlsberg, $4.99. Foster's, $4.99. Strongbow, $4.99. John Smith's, $4.98. And a special offer, Carlsberg Wine and Eggs, $9.99. It's change on a tenner. I mean, dropping the kind of like the decimal point so that, you know, $4.99 becomes $4.99 is what makes that joke so good.
Do we have any theories or ideas as to why John Smith's is a penny cheaper than all other drinks?
I think it's just, it's so ridiculous to read out what you would say, like, Carlin, Carlsberg, Foster, Strongbow, all 499, but what they've done is individually, painstakingly list everything out, and then there's no chain, presumably there's no chain that is going to price a beer that's as mainstream and generic as John Smith's by one penny off. And then going back to the point around the value, I mean, I don't even know if it's a joke, but John Smith's at £4.98. Is anyone paying £5 for a pint of John Smith? Maybe they are. It seems expensive.
Well, I mean, I'd be happy to pay £5 for any kind of pint anywhere these days, so that'd be all right.
Foster? Yeah, maybe. It is change on a tenner.
I mean, that was my favourite bit, the change on a tenner. Yeah, change of 1p.
Yeah.
We get a nice bit of background to his dismissal from this time, which I don't think they've gone into that much detail about it before. So it's constructive dismissal. So he lost, he appealed, he lost, he reappealed, then he lost so much money he had to sell his camper van and his car and buy a smaller car. So he didn't lose his car, which is what he's trying to make out.
But he has something to compromise on his lifestyle. And he's talked about this before. Where he's had to stop buying Dutchy organic pork sausages in favour of other brands that use cheaper bits of the pig, where you will get grizzle in one of five bites. And this time he's now moved from Waitrose to, and I'm shaking as I say this, Morrison's.
Now, tip one for Alan for when he goes shopping. I remember, Nick, when you'd been listening to... this series of Oast House before me, you mentioned that this particular section tickled you quite a bit. So can you, do you want to go into details of what Alan's tip for shopping is?
Well, there are some great, great tips. And tip number one is never shop hungry because you will make crazy decisions. I don't know if anyone's got any notes on what the crazy decisions are. I haven't, but I'm pretty sure it's just buying muffins or mini muffins or chocolate muffins. Basically, you will buy muffins.
I like this, the specificity of what you should eat before you go shopping. So it's two or three buttered ham baps. Seems to me it has to be that.
Yeah. This one reminded me of you, Tom Stab. So I will say it and then throw it to you. He says, shop at the end of the day to get cheap meat. And I know as a fan of the yellow stickered, slightly paler meats, you will buy a pack of ham that maybe once glared bright pink. It is now a sort of slightly diminished shade of pink, but it has got a yellow sticker on it. And
To use Alan's terminology, it's meat that is a cigarette paper away from gone off.
I genuinely did buy some yellow sticker ham today, but it was Tesco finest. my strategy is go to the yellow sticker aisle, see what bargains are to be had, and I like to see if there's a big joint of meat that I can immediately put in the freezer and save for a Sunday further down the line where I'll roast that for sandwiches and or wraps the following week.
What I would say in terms of yellow sticker policy, in terms of acceptable and unacceptable, acceptable to go straight to yellow stickers and see what's available. Acceptable over time as a regular to clock the rough time that the yellow stickers are put out, but I would say shadowing or haunting the ticker tape parade yellow sticker member of staff as they move around the store, strictly unacceptable and tantamount to stalking.
I've seen that in action. I've genuinely seen that in action where the person will be on their way to the aisle where the yellow sticker stuff with a trolley of stuff they're about to sticker, and there will be people just hovering around them waiting to sit until the sticker goes on and it goes on the shelf and they're immediately taking it.
Yeah. If one day you find yourself as part of that pack of golems following the golden ring of discount around the store, you need to take a hard look at yourself.
Yeah, I've never gone that deep.
So he also will pledges to ignore food miles or fair trade.
Oh, absolutely. And he's finally discovered tinned meat, and there is good news. Beef casserole, it's in a tin. Stewed chicken, it's in a tin. Fancy a pie, tin. Mince and onions,
I will draw the line at meat in a tin.
I would not eat, as Adam probably would, beef that now is brown but has a 10% discount yellow sticker on it. But I would happily hoover up tinned meat.
So would you have a, what was it, the Goblins tinned pie, as we've discussed in previous episodes?
Goblins is the exception to the rule, but I would happily have a Heinz all-day breakfast, and in that you are getting a bacon rasher, a pork sausage, a mini burger.
Oh, come on.
I don't think you can
describe it as a
rasher.
At least the yellow sticker is actually like a piece of like actual meat rather than just like condensed and mushed up like bilge. bits of a donkey.
A rasher is cooked and not suspended in liquid. What you're getting is a flaccid, a flaccid bacon condom. Anyway, I feel like we've strayed from the path of Alan a little bit here. Shall we cut to the advert?
Can we just, there's one more. Steak and kidney pudding, it's in a tin. And I echo this sentiment. Delicious, filling, and extremely salty. just three of the selling points for tinned meat there. But yes, should we move on to Pave Buddies?
Let's, yes. Homeowners with a garden. Summer can be a dreadful time of year. I imagine homeowners with a garden are all rueing the day that summer comes round and they get to use it.
Yeah. Far better that you can pave over your lovely green lush lawn thanks to Pave Buddies. Really enjoyed this line. Leave gardening to the idiots. Although, I will say this, gardening can be a bit of a ball ache.
You're always gardening, aren't you? Every weekend, basically.
You are always.
Yeah, I've got my dirt boy dungarees on.
But with Pave Buddy, you can remove your lawn, tree, etc. and replace it with tarmac in a range of colours, but mostly all grey. Why not give yourself a hard garden?
I really did love the phrase, replace it with low stress tarmac. I think we all agree this is one of the better adverts, definitely.
Very good.
I enjoyed this a lot. Because also it's a bit like, you know, I think obviously what this is a bit of a nod towards as well is, you know, there's quite a big tendency for like fake grass, plastic grass and stuff like that in gardens these days. And it's a similar sort of thing where it's like, you've got a garden, rip out the wildlife and put something fake down instead. Really great.
And leave gardening to the idiots. That's what I've heard. Is it time for Filipino praising of Rosa the Cleaner?
Yes, I believe so. She gets 5 minutes off the working day for an excellent task or 10 for outstanding. A reward system I'm sure Alan's very proud of. Good or very good means she has to work the full shift. It has to be excellent or outstanding.
I also like hearing, we don't hear much about Rosa, but I feel like Rosa is the happy and acceptable medium between downtrodden Lynn and foul-mouthed Katrina. Like, she won't take any of his shit, but ultimately she is kind of subordinate to him. I'm keen to hear more about the Rosa relationship, but I think from what you kind of see, she sits somewhere in the middle.
I also like that he uses online translators so that he can lambast Rosa in her own language.
Yeah, as if that's a good thing. Like,
I tried the phrases he says. I tried playing them through Google Translate, and I'll tell you what it came out with. But you know, it's never going to be. I mean, obviously, I was wondering whether there was going to be a joke where what he says is completely incorrect. I'm not sure if it quite comes out like that. But what I got from Google Translate playing this into the speaker was. Medium, you are injured, you're going to be late, you are strong like a cow. So I think some of those kind of you can get where there's a deliberate mistranslation as a bit of a gag. Some of those I think has Google Translate just not picked up properly.
Nice. And then we move on to from Rosa to Lynn. My notes here saying Lynn's life is enviably uncomplex, loyal as a dog and clinically Baptist. I did enjoy the phrase clinically Baptist. By his side or slightly behind him through all the major events, including the death of the Queen and the death of the singer from Queen.
He calls Lynn the most straightforward person ever born here, doesn't he?
Yep, she lives a life of simple desires, a strong coat to wear in winter, a biscuit and a cup of tea at 11, and a consistent downward trend in the number of illegal immigrants reaching our shores. A weekly bath.
He says that she's not quite with him 24/7, 365. But certainly 12-6-3-1-3. So I did the maths on this. Lynn's shift across the course of a year amounts to 3,756 hours. Effectively, she is actively working for Alan for 43% of the year. So when you take out sleeping time, that leaves her probably 5-10% of her year for her own use.
So is this the point where we are introduced to Moira and Lynn as kind of a sleuth double act who enjoy, for one, tracking down local paedophiles, which I thought was a great little nod to kind of like local busybodies who spend their time doing what they think is good work, sort of identifying people that have moved into local communities to nefarious ends.
Yeah, so they spend their time tracking registered sex offenders, but also making sure immigrants have the correct paperwork. So I feel like Lynn is getting more overtly racist as the years go on.
And
here
if they
as well.
Don't have the correct details, correct paperwork, she will pass the details on to the Home Office so they can get resolved one way or another.
And I think also Lynn's friendship with Moira seems to be the crux of why Alan thinks that basically Lynn's work attitude has got bad. He thinks she's taken the eye off the ball here, that she's basically getting obsessed with other things with Moira.
And so I think Lynn and Moira's friendship and partnership leads us to the first reference to our old friend and arguably the start of the emotional through line of this entire series. It's the first Michael reference, talking about his movement from Zero Dark Thirty to 0 hours contracts, which I liked.
Great writing.
And that they briefly shared a storage space back in the day, which contained Carol's old bin bags and stuff Michael stole from the army. Among other things, Michael is also storing a mortar, which we know works because he's tested it out on Dartmoor. And so Lynn recently checked the storage and she came back blotched. It was last accessed in 2013, according to the man on the front desk, whose ethnicity Lynn insisted on telling Alan.
I like that when Lynn comes to Alan, he says that her skin was a giveaway and he has to make her a cup of tea and it takes her 2 hours to calm down in order to make sense.
Yeah, I particularly enjoyed that Alan says in the olden days it would have necessitated a smart slap across the face to find out what happened, but we're in more enlightened times, so yeah, it's licorice tea and waiting for 2 hours.
And once that wait is over, it emerges that Michael was at the self-storage 4 days after his supposed death. I've just written in all caps, Michael lives. which has really reminded me of Halloween Kills for some reason, don't know why. Lynn is now 74 years old, just thought I'd mention that. And Lynn and Moira are obviously now playing private detectives and Alan's worried that it's encroaching on her role. So Alan's initial thought here is not really excitement about Michael. It's more about the worry that this is going to take away from Lynn.
Yeah, because Alan is just kind of brushes this off as like it's some kind of admin error at the Big Yellow Storage Unit. But I love the fact that Lynn's reason is computers don't make mistakes. I thought that was a very good depiction of Lynn's character, that she would have absolute unflappable faith in computers. If it's on a computer, it must be the truth.
Just a little throwaway line, but I love how it paints the picture of the scene where Alan says, "She squared up to me." So she actually squares up to him and goes, "He's alive! Yeah. Michael's alive!"
I also don't know if this is intentional or just good timing, but obviously Lynn having complete faith in the infallibility of computer systems around the time of this whole post office Horizon scandal coming out at the moment and has been in the news for a couple of years. I thought it's quite timely.
Yeah.
There's a brilliant maths error from Alan. I don't know if anyone else clocked this, where he describes Lynn and Moira as being like two Miss Marples, which is two people, two Murder, She Wrote, which is two people, or four Rosemary and Times, which is eight people. Oh, great.
Really good.
Also enjoyed that his example of Lynn's work slipping is that last week she was meant to send a hand cream to Greg Wallace and she actually sent a wallet to Greg Hands. Really like that.
Yeah. Again, that's so silly, but it's really fun. It's really funny, isn't it?
And I also really enjoyed the trick that Alan differs on how to pronounce scone or scone. And pronounces it incorrectly, according to Lynn, at the start of each day to see if she's going to point it out and therefore if she'll be any trouble that day.
Yeah, taking a read on her mood for the day based on how much pushback he gets on the pronunciation was brilliant.
And of course, the big bombshell here is we have Lynn on the end of the phone.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
It's the first time we've heard Felicity Montague actually audibly in the Oast House, isn't it?
I think it's needed to add to that kind of dramatic impact of, you know, it would have less impact if it was Alan saying, "What's that? You found him." But because it comes from Lynn, it has way more impact, I think, which is great.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think great writing from the team here in terms of like saving Lynn for this point. Now, whether that was always part of the plan or whether it was just something that they came to and it worked out with a bit of luck, I don't know, because you're totally right that it really adds some proper gravity to it, that not only is this the reveal that Michael is still alive, but the fact it's the first time we hear Lynn in this piece of Partridge, I thought was great.
I think they did some really good toying with audience expectations and desires in this series as well by drip-feeding some of the Michael information and deliberately delaying and obscuring some of it. So, for example, there's a whole topic of conversation with this phone call with Lynn about who would win in a fight between a horse and three dogs, which obviously has nothing to do with Michael. You've got the whole audience waiting for Michael news, and then you have this theoretical fight. I did check who would win. So according to Real Hibbert on TikTok, he filmed three dogs versus a white horse. I couldn't get the video to play, but the comments suggest that one horse would trounce three dogs.
Oh, that doesn't sound like a video you want to watch.
That's very unsavoury.
Also, also enjoyed the graphical pedantry as well. He likes to tear Michael down and kind of really kind of paint his character as someone who is quite thick and simple. But the line, "Can you borrow me a fiver?" did tickle me.
I like his description of the fact that he'd be keen to fix the bits of Michael that broke post-war, but the bits that broke pre-war, he'd need to leave to a professional.
Because there is a difference.
Obviously, we'll kind of get into it as the series progresses. But what was everyone's reaction when you kind of one heard Felicity Montague say that Alan say that Lynn told him that that Michael's alive, and when you heard Lynn, and what are your thoughts about generally this series, about they finally played the Michael card? Is this the right time?
I think it is the right time. I think I'm always biased towards the episodes or the Partridge that moves the narrative on, rather than just sort of entertaining the treads water. So I like that this is lit the fuse on something. I guess when I was listening at this point, I was just hoping that it wasn't all tease and no delivery. And obviously we'll get on to what extent there was a delivery or not. But
yeah,
I found this very exciting.
Yeah, and as a kind of counter to that point, without kind of going forward with spoilers, you've had kind of the High Noon character in series one, and it was kind of like, who is that character? Is it good? Whereas I think this, you're like, what? So yeah, but much more positive.
I wonder if the tide has turned a little bit as well on Coogan and the Gibbonses being very anti giving people what they want and trying to constantly subvert expectations, with being a bit more comfortable, having been on the Partridge ride a bit longer to connect the dots between, you know, the most popular era of Partridge and today, and being a bit happier to do, not fan service, but being a bit more happy to sort of deliver the storylines that you know, people are into.
Is it like a band adamant that they won't play the old stuff and then finally accepting that it's okay and it's actually quite a good thing to play the old stuff, because that's the thing that people love about you and got into you from?
I think it's a band saying, we will never tour the 20th anniversary of this Michael album, to then saying, okay, we're going to tour it, but all the versions are going to be reimagined. So the pursuit for Michael is on, and plenty more on Michael's story to come. As we cover future episodes of The Oast House in future episodes of Monkey Tennis, we'd love to know your thoughts, theories, questions, challenges on both this series of The Oast House, on Big Beacon, and on And Did These Feet, the forthcoming Partridge series, as well as anything else in the APU. You can get in touch on Instagram at Monkey Tennis Pod, Twitter at The Partridge Pod, Facebook.com/The Partridge Pod, ThePartridgePod@gmail.com, or if you fancy flinging us a few coppers in appreciation for this fine podcasting, then it's ko-fi.com/monkeytennis. All contributions gratefully received. That's it from us. So from all of us at Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast, see you next week. Thanks and goodbye.
Oh, I fancy a pint of John Smith's now.
I am hopping mad and I want something in the middle.
Aha!
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, yeah, yep, yeah, yep, absolutely.
Monkey Tennis?
Bring, bring. There's a new chat in town.
I had the last laugh.
Dan!
Monkey Tennis?
Little pierce my foot on the spine.
With a chuckle, with a chuckle.
No.
Monkey Tennis?
Radical. Awesome. Mega.
Monkey tennis?
Okay.
Where's my assistant? I do not know.
Monkey tennis?
Edmunds is a total wazzock of a guy.
Yes, 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 and yes.
It's hotter than the sun.
I said, who the hell is that?
This is great banter.
Yeah.
Monkey tennis?
Back of the net.
The people who enjoy Alan Partridge will enjoy this podcast. The people who've never got it still won't get it.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.